Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Hair Life podcast. Now, today we are diving into a topic that's had the internet, TV, and honestly, a lot of dinner tables buzzing. The recent Netflix show Adolescence has stirred up a fair bit of controversy, but also cracked open a conversation that we need to be having. Teens, social media, and the real impact behind the screens, whether you love it, whether you hated it, or you felt completely torn. It's hard to deny, it definitely struck a nerve. So today, me and Callie are going to be unpacking what the show got right, what it missed, and why the debate around teenage life online is more urgent than ever. Morning, Callie. How are you doing? Lovely to see you.
All good, thank you. I'm looking forward to talking about this, considering I've got four teenagers in the house. So, yeah.
You're probably more of an expert on this than me, because mine obviously aren't quite there yet. They're bordering. My son is definitely turning into a bit of a Kevin at the minute. For those of you that are listening, if you remember Kevin, what a joy. That's what my son is turning into at the minute. So, yeah, I'm seeing it each and every day. So, Adolescence. I mean, you've obviously seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it. And I'm actually watching it again with Eliza because I want her to watch it.
I think that's a good idea. I'm going to do that with Archie, I think, just so he can get a real feel of it. I mean, it's interesting. I finished watching it. It was a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. And for me, for anybody that is not seen it, and you have teenage children, then I think it is something you should go and have a look at, because there's a number of factors. I mean, number one for me, I thought the acting, some of it was absolutely fantastic. And I was blown away by the young kid and the fact that he was actually like from a council estate, never done any, you know, acting really before, and that was his first gig. And for the way that he did it, the emotion, the rawness of it was absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, and can I add to that? So Luke, Andy's son, is 16 and he's studying digital media. And he was saying how where he's at college, he's watching things in a different way. He's watching the media in a different way. And he said to me, I think they took that in one shot. Like, so every episode, it wasn't like cut and paste, if you like. They just went for it. And then I started to read a lot of that on Instagram and places like that, saying how they recorded everything just there and then. So I think that makes a big impact on the actual episode, because the emotion towards it isn't cut and paste. It's basically, you know, they just done it.
And it's interesting as well, because I mean, I suppose, so if we look at it, the background behind the story is a young boy who unfortunately has an incident with a young girl. The girl unfortunately dies, and from that it erupts into the family's turmoil, the school's turmoil, the children's turmoil, and everybody that was affected by the situation. And it goes on for, it's about a year, isn't it? It's about over a period of a year, I think, between sort of start and kind of finish. And it shows what it was like, the actual initial process. That first show is the one that really got me. Like, the first one, the first show and the last show, there's four, completely shocked me. I sat there and I was emotional. I was tense. I was almost like holding myself, you know, as a father, and as a mother, as a parent, to witness that, to see that, to feel that for such a young boy, was really like, my brain was incredible.
And as a parent, I was thinking, like, on that first one, you almost want to think he didn't do it, don't you? Like, the way that he's saying, oh, dad, you know, you think, gosh, if that was me, I would immediately assume that my daughter has not done that, because you just you wouldn't want to comprehend in your head that they could have potentially done that. And it would be really hard. It would be really hard to find out. Like, I would have my daughter's back no matter what. But if I found out that she did something like that, I think that would, I would find that really hard on our relationship, on everything, because she's still my daughter and I would still love her. But also I would be thinking, gosh, this, what has she done? Like, what made her do that? What possessed her to do it? So yeah, it would be very hard as a parent to accept that.
If you've not seen the show, I'm sorry if I mention this particular scene. If you have seen it, you will understand what it's like. But I think the moment when they are being questioned by the police officer, and they, you can almost tell the police officers have got something, they've got something there, and they are giving him the opportunity to just be completely open and honest in this moment. And when the police officer leaves the room and the lawyer leaves the room and he's sat there with his dad, and you know, his dad said, look, just tell me, did you do anything? Did you do this? And when he said, no, dad, I didn't, I was like, well, okay, he's telling his dad the truth. I believe him. And even like now, it makes my, like my hair just sort of standing up. And then when the police officer comes back in and sits there and is literally like, right, I need to show you this. This is your last opportunity. You need to show me. And when he shows in the video of that scene of what he did, oh my God, just like as a parent, yeah, just how you feel.
It would just break you. It would break you. Yeah. You can never unsee that. Yeah. And then it's like, you can't not love your child anymore. You can't not worry about your child and want them to be okay. But you would be absolutely devastated. And then the guilt of thinking, you know, that's somebody else's child. Like, it would just be my worst nightmare. It'd be horrendous.
It's, I think it's then what it does. And I think that's what the show did. It also then questions you as the parent, and we'll get to that in a minute, but it makes you just think, how did I get to this? How did my beautiful boy get to this stage where he felt that at any situation that was acceptable, that he would carry this out? Like, that was the, like, for me, that was like the head fook. It was like, how?
But this is, this is what's really hard. I have found this phase of parenting the hardest, because your children, so I had a big conversation with Eliza about this the other day, and I was actually crying because I feel so strongly about it. But your children go from you being their world, like me and Eliza are incredibly close, we've always been very close, and I've always felt really confident in our relationship. But she turned 13 a few weeks back, and I'd say over the last 6 months to a year, what's become really important to her is her friends. And that is normal for a teenager. But what I can't get my head around, and her friends are lovely, like I don't have a problem with her friends, what I can't get my head around is how you can know somebody for 6 months to a year and all of a sudden everything they say and what they do is more important than what your mum has said, and you've had your mum's had your back for the last 12 years. Like, it's almost like I don't matter anymore. I'm not important anymore because my friends have said this and done this. And like, she doesn't see it like that, but that's the way it comes across to me. And like, I love Eliza to bits, but fucking hell, she's sassy as anything. So like, she is her mother's daughter, let me tell you that. But yeah, I've been split up with her dad since she was one, and I've always been reasonably confident in my parenting. I mean, I've never had so many conversations with her dad. Like, I mean, we've got her dad and I've got a good relationship. It's not a problem, but I can't tell you the amount of times I've had to phone her dad and be like, oh my God, I can't actually cope with this. Like, and it's not, she's not really, really naughty or anything like that. She's gone from being really obedient and easy to all of a sudden, like, having her own mind. And like, some of the things she comes out with, I'm like, oh my God, like, did my child just say that? And as I say, it's nothing out of the ordinary. It is, if you Googled, how does a 13-year-old girl behave? That is my daughter. Like, that is who she is. So she's not doing anything wrong. But I have definitely felt the slip of control, and I've lost the trust. Like, I've always trusted. She's always been a sort of kid where if she's done something wrong and I say, well, what's happened? She does always admit it. And that always gave me that trust. Whereas now I'm a bit like, oh, like, would she admit that? Like, I'm questioning her. I'm questioning us. I'm questioning our relationship. And it is, the teenage phase is really bloody hard, really hard.
And it's interesting because I think, I mean, that's probably, there's a reason for me why I want Archie to see that, because I, and we've brought this up recently, and again, it's really interesting you brought it up, but the whole trust scenario, because I've made a real point with him. So Archie does, like, they're silly things, but they're like, he'll sneak out of his bedroom in the morning early because he wakes up, he's an early riser, and he'll sneak upstairs and he'll grab some, I don't know, some biscuits or whatever from the cupboard. So he's 12, but he's 13 in August. So he's that bit. And then down with the screens. So again, we'll get to this in a minute, but obviously we try to basically ban screens during the week on any level, and they're a treat at the weekend. And he'll sneak up and he knows where they are, but he'll sort of try and get on them and you think we're asleep, you know, but like, I'm like, you know, a wolf, I hear everything. And I'm like, look, mate, I just want to bring this to your attention. Like, if I can't trust you, I've said no. If I can't trust you, I said, then it's like any relationship. If we don't have trust, then our relationship isn't going to be strong, because I'm not going to believe when you say something to me. Whereas I want to believe everything you tell me. And also, I don't ever want our children to lie to us. Like, it doesn't matter how big or bad or whoever it is, I'm big enough for you to tell me the truth.
This has been a really big thing in Eliza and I's relationship. I've always been like, if you tell me the truth, I'd much rather be annoyed with you for doing what you've done, but you've told me the truth. If I found out you're lying afterwards, you're in more trouble for lying than you are for telling the truth. And we've had situations recently where I could tell she really didn't want to say what she'd done, but she did say it, yeah.
If we're all open and honest, honesty is always the best policy, like, regardless. It's a bit like, look, I'd rather own something. It's like, take ownership of the shit that you've created, right? And then deal with it. And that's the thing, like, I'm trying to teach our kids, like, the one thing, and again, we'll get into this in a minute, but I think that's the thing about the sort of the parent. It's like, look, that is what we are there to do. So I'm trying to teach them good morals and good things at this age, which will then guide them into the right path. But it all comes down to trust.
Going back to that conversation I had with Eliza, like, I was saying to her, so I'm really getting on her nerves at the moment because I'm constantly pulling her up on something. Like, she's had no pocket money since before Christmas because she can't seem to get through a day without her room being a mess or her doing something. So she basically had that taken away from her. Between Christmas and now, she's been grounded. She's been banned from having people around the house. Like, I've never had to do this sort of thing to her, but I'm having to do it now because she's like 13. She thinks she knows everything, this kid. So, and I said to her, like, I know I'm getting on your nerves and I know it's, you know, I know it's annoying, but it's my job as your parent for you to grow up and be a decent human being. Like, I would be failing you if I didn't pull you up on this stuff. And it's annoying for me as much as it is for you. But I literally feel like I tell her off every single day over something and I hate it because I've never really been like that. But it has to be done. And I think you do have to stick to those boundaries. I definitely feel like we've turned a corner over the last, well, week or 2 weeks or whatever, but it has been pretty relentless.
That's where, isn't it difficult that you, because I know, and again, maybe it's the same with a mum with a daughter and a son and a dad. I feel really bad that I'm having to chase him every day about something because I don't want to. And I made it really clear to him, oh, you're the only person that I actually like raise my voice to. I don't raise my voice to anybody else. And I was like, and it's not because I want to, it's because it seems to be the only way that you actually listen. You know, you just did something when I asked you to do it that really is on your list of things that you need to do each and every day. We would be fine, you know, and hopefully you love me even more than you do, you know? So I think there's that bit. And I think that's probably the element then within sort of adolescence where it's like, look, this has opened up a much wider kind of conversation. And I think the thing is that probably as the sort of shows went on, when you suddenly went to the school, that was the element for me when the kids were actually in the school and they were being then interviewed. Suddenly the things that came out of it from that, which then gets onto the screens, the social media and the other element. And again, look, probably every parent that ever listens to this show and has teenage children probably has to deal with some form or other of the impact of social media and what it is. But I think the thing that got me the most was I didn't realize that there was this whole world of conversation that isn't with words, that is with emojis. That is the thing that boom, again, I had no idea. I didn't realize there were different, you know, love hearts mean different things and clowns mean this and skulls mean that and, you know, aubergines are this. I mean, honestly, I know there's a few that we might use, but I didn't realize that they were used in such a way. And I think the concept then that obviously came out during that show where it then was the sort of the bullying element being done by emojis. I mean, Jesus, you know, I'm of a world where, you know, if you were bullied, it was because they were picking on you and they were beating you up and, you know, pushing you over and stealing your lunch. And your dad would tell you to go and punch him in the face and knock him out. And I remember doing it in school. Stuart Drake, God bless you. You know, I remember you and Jamie Bowen, you beat me up every single day nearly for like 3 months. And then my dad told me to go and hit him back. And I did one day. And then I ended up becoming friends with him, which is ridiculous. But it was because I sort of stood up for myself. That's the world that I grew up in. You know, kind of easier. It was like, I can't imagine what it must be like being tormented through social media.
Yeah. And it was, you were able to see it back in the day. Like, so somebody might have seen you being hit or you hitting somebody else. Whereas with the phones, I think, especially with Snapchat, because Snapchat disappears, you know, it is a bit more hidden. I mean, I am probably a little bit of a dragon when it comes to Eliza's phone. Like, I am, I always like, I've got this thing where I can turn our apps off and all that sort of stuff. So probably am a little bit of a dragon. She was really honest with me, as in, like, she knew what all the emojis meant and like told me all of it, whatever. But yeah, it is actually, you know, for a parent, it's really scary. And what I found really interesting about the film is it was that policeman's son that had to explain to him as a policeman what those emojis meant. Now, you'd think as a policeman, they would have had this knowledge, but obviously he didn't. And he needed that knowledge from those teenagers for him to be able to crack that case and find out what was going on. I found that part really, really interesting.
And that's where, and it wasn't until, so then what I did, ladies and gentlemen, is I thought, oh, I'm going to go and research it and have a look. So it's quite interesting when you suddenly then start actually looking at some of these things. So it was like the skull sign, which basically it doesn't mean something's died. It means like I'm dead as I'm laughing so hard I can't breathe. So if your teen texts you after a funny video with like a skull, don't panic. Or the crying face, looks like I'm crying, right? But half the time it's being used to say, I'm laughing so hard, I'm crying. This is so dramatic, I can't cope. So it's like emotional whiplash with one little emoji. And then the one that I thought was like, was the eyes, like the side eye, which was, that's like their gossip mode is activated. So this means I'm watching. Did you see that? Spill the tea. It's like a whole mood thing. And when you start going through it, I mean, I didn't realize all the different love heart means.
Yeah, sex, different sexualities. Love, yeah,
how you want it, what you like, what you don't like. I was like, oh my God. And this is when you think
that. I'll send it to Andy.
Yeah, but then. Andy, you're going to get the pink love heart later, mate. It's your birthday. But you think, you know, this, and this is that thing where you've then got to drag things back to then, right, it's the parenting element, right? Because I still question, I know I am quite a taskmaster with my children. And much of that comes from the fact, like, my father was a taskmaster and he was very much about discipline, respect, manners, all of those things, which I personally feel are disappearing in current culture. Opening a door for an older lady, keeping a door open, you know, please, thank you. When you're letting somebody pass by you because there isn't enough room, please, thank you. All those little things are the things that I really notice as a nearly 50-year-old man. And that's what kind of bothers me, because I think those simple principles should be fundamental to how each and every child, it doesn't matter what your background is, how much money you've got or anything. Manners don't cost literally, they cost nothing. And I think this is where the parenting element has sort of crossed over, because there's still so much of it, which is that we're handing a lot of parenting over to computer screens. We're handing it over to iPads. You know, we run busy businesses and it's very easy to just maybe want your time with your partner in the evening or something like that. And actually what you can do is you can hand a screen over to your kids and they can lose themselves for 2 hours and you can have 2 hours of peace and quiet. That's not what being a parent is.
So can I just jump in there? So as the parent, I also feel like I want to be responsible enough that she's not having too much screen time. I mean, as she's got older, I'm definitely a bit more lax. When she was younger, I was really particular about it. Like, she wasn't allowed a phone in her bedroom and all that sort of stuff. Like, I was really, really particular. But then I do think, when you think back to when you was a kid, there's a fine line between, like, I do want her to understand what's going on in the world. I don't want her to be that one child that's so naive, she doesn't know what the emojis mean. Because I think it's important that she's growing up in a different era to that we are. And why should she be so, like, part of me wants to wrap her up in cotton wool and not let her see the big wide world. But then she's going to become an adult and see the big wide world. And I do think you almost have to allow them a certain amount so they know what's going on. They know what all these things mean and stuff. But then you have to tip the balance and make sure that your parenting gives them enough morals and boundaries that they're not just going off the rails. Like, we've just got our second pony. So we are now a household of two ponies. But actually, I'm welcoming for that type of stuff, although I don't particularly like what he does to my disposable income, because it gives her discipline and boundaries. Like, I had a problem with her the last 6 months, constantly taking the piss at what time she's going to bed. So then I'm like, right, I know you haven't been to bed because, like, you know, I've heard this, blah, blah. And then I'm arguing with her constantly. Whereas now I'm like, if you don't go to bed and you don't get up and do your pony's gone, basically. And let me tell you, she has been up. Like, that's that. I mean, she is a kid that sleeps for her alarm because she likes sleeping, but she's generally up and very responsible. So it has changed her. I mean, she's, as I said, she's had another pony for a while, but we've now got the pony on site, so we've put our stables up. But it has changed her responsibility towards it. And I've almost pushing that because I'm like, this is what you need to do to grow up. And I can't wait for her to go and get a proper job. I've just said that I want her and Elise, which is Andy's youngest, to start, like, selling things on Vinted and doing stuff to pay for their pony. Like, why should we have to keep paying for stuff, then, to do stuff?
I mean, there's an element for me now, which is then alongside that parenting, and I'm 100% with you, they're growing up in a very different world. So we can't do that. We can't protect them. And there's a, it's really difficult, like, listeners, because this is where, like, for me, my frustration bodes with, I'm going to say, with a lot of parenting and the way that we are wrapping them up in cotton wool. We are doing this thing where we're not making kids get outside and climb trees and break bones and hurt themselves and be outside. And it doesn't matter what the way you look at it. Every single study shows kids should be doing that. They're like trees, right? Their roots need to be strong. The only way they get strong is being blown around and tossed about. That's how they get stronger, because we're now breeding this almost like, and again, this is the thing with it. Yeah, like, anybody, basically, since 2008, right? Let's just get to it. Since 2008, all of the data shows it has had a tremendously negative effect on the world as a whole. That's a fact. Since we've had smartphones, it's not great. Yes, there's some benefits, but most of them are pretty negative. Certainly for most of the kids now, the biggest age group, 18 to 25 year olds, which is the ones that have probably been the most affected because they grew up with those phones at a young age. Depression, anxiety, you name it, they're weak as fuck. They can't take anything. And that's why they're most of the people claiming incapacity benefit in the UK.
Yeah, and they know so much. I mean, some of it's really good, but the amount of like young kids that know so much about mental health and all these different things that we, because we never had access to that sort of stuff, we've had to learn that later in life. But they seem to just know so much because they've just got this wealth of information on their smartphone.
We have basically kept kids and given them screens, they've given them access, and they're not going out doing what kids should do, right?
As you're saying that, I'm looking at my daughter outside pooping in the field, so I'm quite lucky in that situation. She is an outdoor kid.
Yeah, but that's what you want. It's like we've turned our garden into some sort of playground, play zone with as many things I could possibly do to get the kids out there and entertain themselves, because I want them out. Like, your children are safer out walking now. Okay, they're much safer than being sat on a screen, because I tell you what, there's no controls that you can really get hold of, and yet you'll let somebody have full access. Yet, you know, I think it's like 94% of the kids that are ever like, you know, abducted or any of those things, they're groomed. They're groomed by, you know, parents, brothers, sisters, cousins, somebody you know. They're not picked up on a street. So like, we have to, now the sun is shining, we have to get kids out. We can't keep them in. And I think that's what this, you know, this is where this bigger conversation, this is what adolescence has done. You know, our school sent emails out straight away about making sure that before bed, you read with your kids and you spend time with them and you deal with these things as a parent. And it is, because it's always like, you know, it's always somebody else's view is different to yours. And I totally get it. But I think I'm definitely trying to do the best that I can as a parent to make my kids resilient, strong, independent, know what the world is all about. We know that this world is only getting tougher, right?
Yeah. We know as humans, like, we all know if we eat well and exercise and go out in nature, like, we all know that it makes us feel better. So like, we're big walkers in our family. We're always out walking. We walk the dog, like, we're on hacks for the ponies. So I do get a lot of outdoor time, especially with the kids, which I'm really appreciative of. But I always, like, this morning I've been up and out the house at 6:15 and been for a run. So I feel great before I've even started work. Whereas tomorrow I won't do my run in the morning, but I will have to, when I finish work, I will have to go out for a walk because I just feel like I just need fresh air. So if we know that as adults and parents, I do think we should be instilling that into our kids. Like, it's like, for me, like, arguing with Eliza about her having enough sleep, drinking enough water. She thinks I'm a dragon. I'm like, I'm just asking you to look after your body and your mind, you know?
But then you see, this is where that conversation can explode. And that's the beautiful thing, what I love about our amazing podcast, Callie, is that, you know, we have the topic and look, you know, as a bunch of hairdressers, we have a topic and we discuss it and we might go off somewhere else and we hit another ball somewhere else. Fundamentally, we all know as human beings, the things that are good for us, right? We all know the things that are good for us. It is so freaking simple. It is unbelievable. The problem with it is that most of us either choose only a proportion of those things, and then we go down a rabbit hole with a load of other things that just, they know they're not good for us. And it's only when you're brave enough to step up and actually make some big changes, you suddenly go, holy shit, why didn't I do this sooner? Why didn't I? Yeah. So there's that element. And it's interesting because I think this is one of those sort of shows that I think you could probably go on for hours talking about because there's so many different topics within it. But I love it when you get a program that like that, that causes that little bit of shock, that causes people to actually have a conversation and think about it. And I do wonder now whether this is one of those things like, should we now be being more open with our children than we've ever been? And making sure that we are aware of how they're feeling, really understanding how it is they are feeling, so that as a parent, we are there to support them, because that's all we are, isn't it? We are there literally to support them in their journey.
I do think as a parent as well, we need to also be aware of what's going on in their world. So coming back to adolescence, like you and I have both said before the show, can't believe the amount of clients that's come in the salon. Everyone's been talking about it. 90% of people that I've spoken to, actually 100% of people that I've spoken to said, I know nothing about the emojis. I know nothing about this. Like, is that really what it's like in schools these days? And I think like, I feel like I've got now got a responsibility to keep up with what's going on in these kids' world, because otherwise, what if I see these emojis on my daughter's phone and I have got no idea what's going on? You know? So I do think it has rocked us as parents as well. Yeah. We thought we was the cool generation, because like our parents never had mobile phones and stuff. So I thought, you know, when I got my old Nokia 3210, I thought I was well cool. But now, like, you look at what our kids have got access to, and it's just a whole new world. And we have to educate ourselves to protect them. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes, we can allow them to have some freedom, but we also need to, you know, protect them. I think the teenage years are so vulnerable. They're so, so vulnerable.
But this is why I think there's an element now is this just the new way of growing up? And what we all need to do as parents is adapt. Or is this genuinely like a more damaging way of growing up? Because this is me being as an older man, I feel really privileged that I grew up in the time when I did, because I actually love the fact that I didn't have all of these other distractions. You know, I didn't have that. I really didn't. And I think my social interactions were so much better as a result of it. And I still have those friendships now, years later. And I really, really appreciate that. Whereas I think that's, but again, most of my team would probably say, who are younger, would probably like completely disagree with me and go, no, because this is the way we socialize.
I think there's pros and cons. I think like when I look at something like for Luke, for instance, he spends a lot of time on his PlayStation, which you can go, oh, do you know what? Get off your PlayStation. But he's socializing with his friends. He's playing a game with his friends. Like sometimes he's on his headphones and I can hear him screaming from upstairs where he's so excited and playing with his friends. So if he's the type of kid that's what he enjoys, yes, he plays football in a football team and stuff. But like for Eliza, for instance, is out every day with her friends. She's constantly out. She's relentless. So if I was to compare like maybe the younger two with the older two, like they're different characters. So actually, having social media and stuff gives them friendships and interaction in different ways. But then I think when I was younger, I loved, like, me and my friend Kaylee used to go over the park, climb trees, set traps. Like, we absolutely loved it. But then I just think, well, times do move on, don't they?
I think you do. And it's interesting because I get to a stage now where it's like, right, this is kind of the responsibility question in this podcast today, and it's who's responsible. So who's responsible for the controls? Is it like the platforms? Is it the parents? Is it the schools? Is it the teens themselves? Who's responsible for helping manage that and take care of that? Is it us as a parent? You know, I mean, is we are the most important people in their lives, right? Because basically without us, those children can't be the person they want to be, because ultimately you either fund it, you take care of it, you love, you nurture, you do all of those things. And it's not really the school's responsibility. What I kind of feel is the school's responsibility is either, you know, mobile phones are not available during school time and they have time to just focus on being them and their mates and doing their education, because surely there's going to be a benefit.
You know, they do their homework and everything on the mobile phone now. So in a way, it's great. Like, technology is amazing that everything's on an app. Brilliant. But then in another way, it does give them full access to their phone. So what's to say they're not, you know, sliding onto ChatGPT and getting the answers off of that? It's a really difficult one. I think as a parent, we have to be responsible. We have to teach our children to be responsible. But then maybe, I don't know, I mean, where does it stop? You could say that the school needs to educate us, or the provider of the apps need to educate us, but where does it stop, you know? I do parental controls on Eliza's phone, but that's not to say she won't figure out the bloody code and turn them off, you know?
I mean, again, this is where there's a number of different factors, but I think we've got to get to a stage where social media companies, I think, have to be held to account. I don't think kids should be having social media until they're like 16. And I think there's a number of things. Like, you can't tell me, I mean, again, you've only got to look back at the data. When you look back at the single biggest shift in social media was when Facebook, when it was the original Facebook, obviously it was only pictures. You couldn't like, you couldn't comment or anything. So it was just pictures and that was it. And you could just see what your mates were doing. The single biggest shift was when then Facebook put the like button and then they introduced comments. And I think the data shows that in that 2-year period of launching it, there was 125% increase in depression and anxiety in young ladies. Men were slightly lower, but that was the increase because suddenly pictures of them in their outfits and bikinis and whatever and holidays, suddenly, yeah, people could comment, people could say horrible things, people could, you know, and there's the shift.
Yeah, and that's really sad, but you can also look at that. If you turn that on its head, social media has absolutely made my business. Like, I tripled my clientele within 6 months. Like, I've had amazing opportunities.
Yeah, but you weren't doing it when you were 14, 15. You're doing that now, aren't you? So that's what I mean. I think it's more about, I think the controls should be, we should be not letting children have exposure to sometimes certain things that are maybe more adolescent, or if you're going to give them exposure, it should be on our terms, not somebody else's.
Yeah. And also educate them, like, who cares what other people think? Like, if you're happy in your body, don't worry about what anybody else thinks or says. And if you are sensitive, maybe don't put that picture up or work on your confidence. Like, it is, I just think it's really difficult in general to be like, nobody's right or wrong, are they? You just have to try your best.
This is the hardest element, is I think we live in a world now of fake. It's fake, isn't it? Everybody uses a filter. Everybody wants to look the best that they can. Everybody, you know, the whole Instagram world is just fake. And, you know, that's something that I don't think is ever going to go away. But I think what we can do as parents is look at programs like this, understand, create a conversation, be open with our children, and let them know that we are effectively there. We're there for them. And, you know, they're not on their own. There is support, there is help. That's what we're here to do. And I think probably the little bit for us maybe as parents is that we need to be maybe a little bit more curious. Maybe we need to be asking better questions to our kids about actually what is going on and how is it they're really feeling, because maybe we don't. And like you said, you know, we sometimes don't know what they're doing when they're downstairs in their room or who they're chatting to. And maybe we should just ask a little bit more. Yeah, what a show. You know, if anything you want to kind of finish off there with, Kelly?
No, I just was thinking about a comment that I was chatting to Eliza the other week and she was upset. And it was like loved a bit, but she was just being dramatic over a load of nonsense, basically, which, you know, we all do. We've all been there. And I said to her, look at your lifestyle, like look at everything you've got. You need to work on your level of appreciation and gratitude. And then she came back with, well, I do appreciate that, but it doesn't mean that I can't feel bad about something. And then I suddenly thought, well, actually, you do have the right to feel bad. You do have the right to be upset. But I'd just like you to be slightly more grateful when you're doing that. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's all relevant, isn't it? And I think we're learning as parents, as they're learning, as they're going through life and they're changing and, you know, we are changing too. And I don't know, I certainly wasn't prepared for this part of parenting, for sure.
Being a parent is not easy. And every day, week, month, year, you learn yourselves. So that was our show today. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Miss Borge, where can they find you?
I'm at the Lifestyle Hairstylist on Instagram, or you can just Google Kelly Borg and you'll find all sorts of stuff.
And then you can have a look at Nathan.hairlife or the Hairlife Show on Instagram. And you can find me at pretty much anywhere if you just type in my name. I'm around. I look forward to joining you next week on Hairlife. And please always remember, we love a little review. We like a little thumbs up. And we'd also like to hear from you. So you can DM us with any of your questions and things you want us to be talking about on the show. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Ciao.